Chicago, Illinois, this is the Chewing Podcast.
I'm Louisa Chu, Chicago Tribune food and dining reporter and trained chef.
And I'm Monica Eng, WBEZ food and health reporter, home cook, and food writer.
This week on Chewing, we talk noodles, dumplings, and bacon in our second season finale.
We talk to chef and author Lydia Bastianich about Italian food around the world.
Then I talk to our friend and founder of Dumpling Fest and Bacon Fest, Seth Zurer.
And finally, I deliver the Taiwanese installment of What Chinese People Eat When Chinese People Go to Chinese Restaurants.
All that and more on this second season finale of Chewing.
So, Louisa, we're here in the Tribune Tower.
The historic Tribune Tower.
Yes. And we've camped out in one of the conference rooms because we thought it would be better than your car this time. And I've just come back from interviewing Emmy Award-winning TV personality, author, restaurateur, and chef Lydia Bastianich at the Harold Washington Library. I have to say it was a smashing success, but earlier in the day,
you must say so yourself.
She said, I spoke to Louise as well.
Yes, she did. Lydia stopped by when she first arrived in town, and I know that you were busy doing your other thing, and so we had a chance to chat not only for a video, which you'll see at Chicago Tribune, but as well as for this little podcast right here.
And so tell me some of the stuff you talked about. I don't know what I talked about. It was probably better, but I did not record that. How did yours go?
It went fantastic. In fact, I probably stole some of your questions. We had a chance to talk not only about the beautiful Italian food that she makes on her television show, her, as you said, Emmy Award-winning television show on PBS, but also some of her world travels. She just got back from India, where she tasted jackfruit. And Lydia is not only about Italian food, she is mind-blowingly working with some jackfruit as well as talking about just other sustainability issues. So pretty fascinating.
And here it is.
We are in the Chicago Tribune Test Kitchen right now with the famous, world-famous author, chef, personality, Lydia Bastianich. People are best, you think that they best know you for being a TV chef these days, PBS chef?
I think they know me best because the majority of people see me on TV and teaching Italian cooking. But then, you know, the second is my restaurants, my other enterprise. And they also, you know, the family aspect of me, being a grandma and the unity of the family. We are now four generations in my house between my mother, myself, my daughter, and her daughter. So I think, you know, Italian family, mother, woman, cook, chef, TV, all of those things.
And our secret, in our heads, best friend, basically, right? So,
but you know what? I get a lot of emails, and it seems that I bring out the nostalgia of people's kind of memories of home, of grandma, of mother, of food. You know, food evokes a lot of sentiments and a lot of memories. And maybe the way I cook, I present it simple, straightforward. People out there, when they watch me, they connect and they feel like I am part of their family. I am their sort of grandma. You cook just like my grandmother. Oh my God, the moves are even like my grandmother. This is what I get. And I love it.
Like if you had a really cool grandmother, you know. So, but tonight you are actually going to be speaking in Chicago at the Harold Washington Library Center with our Chewing co-host Monica Eng, who cannot be with us right now because she's doing her other job. And one of the things that Monica told me that you're going to be talking about is, or maybe she, sometimes she doesn't prepare, your next book, your new book.
One of the things we're going to certainly talk about is my next book, which is Lydia's Entertaining Italian Style. That'll come out in October. And we'll have by then 26 episodes for the TV to go parallel with the book. And that book is going to be all about entertaining. How do you change a recipe that's for six and you have 24 coming? How do you do that? Also, you know, if you want to have, like, let's say, a pizza party, you know, how do you set that up? If you want just to, you can have a party if you don't want to cook. Just a buffet, Italian style, antipasto, cold cuts, cheeses, marinated vegetables, and all of that. So the book is going to kind of address all those issues. But I think tonight is, you know, like an intimate conversation with Lydia. And I think Monica can take me anywhere she wants, ask me any questions. You know, we'll have just a relaxed discussion, and then we'll open it up for questions to the people in the audience.
Oh boy, be careful what you wish for, Lydia, with Monica there. But I know one of the other things, though, is that you're here for the One Book, One Chicago series, which is focusing on Barbara Kingsolver's book, Animal Vegetable Miracle, about sustainability in food. So, of course, we talk a lot about, you know, the family and the entertaining and the pleasurable aspects of Italian food. You know, you travel the world, not just in the U.S., not just in Italy, but what are you seeing in terms of, like, I guess the context of Italian food and sustainability in the world right now?
Well, you know, I always use this reference point, and I, in my whole career, that philosophy stayed with me. So when I was young, up until the age of 12, I grew up in a setting with grandma, my maternal grandmother. And it was the area that I was Italy, but then it became Yugoslavia, so it was communist Yugoslavia. So it was kind of, you know, there wasn't enough food and there were limitations. Grandma fed us all. We had chickens, we had ducks, we had rabbits, we had goats, we had milk, we had the vegetables, you know, and with her, I mean, string beans, you know, you have it nice and green, you have string beans. When they mature and all of that, they become dry beans. We used to take them, shell them, put them in the sun and dry. The excess figs that we had, we used to harvest them, put them on fig leaves, in the sun, and then they would be for the winter. She didn't waste a crumb, because everything that she prepared took a lot of work and hard labor, and so I grew up, even the crumbs when we ate, she would pick up and throw it to the chickens, the potato peels, the squash peels, and all of that. All that went into a cauldron. She would cook the meal for the pigs, and so on. So when she killed a chicken for a meal or Sunday meal, every single part of the chicken was used. I mean, the head, the feet, the wings, all of that would make a soup. The insides, the stomach, the intestines, the liver, the heart, and the egg, the unborn eggs inside, that would make a frittata. That would be like a snack. And then the rest, she would make a sauce and then make a big pile of gnocchi, and she could feed 12 people. So, you know, I felt in my childhood the not so much the hunger, but the lack and the respect that food should have and that deserves. And that's how I cook. That's how I think. In my travels, yes, you encounter this abundance where food is wasted. And, you know, when you look at the statistics, I think that 40% of what Americans buy in the refrigerator goes in the garbage. And there's yet 20% of the world population that is hungry. So, you know, these things cannot be ignored. We need to be part of the solution. We are part of the problem. We need to be part of the solution. But the great thing about it is that people are paying attention, that people are aware. As I travel around the world, different cultures, you see how they approach different food. And, you know, sadly, maybe to say, the people out in the country that grow the food, that work for the food, I think understand better to respect. It's in the big cities, I guess, because, you know, in the big cities, you don't have the opportunity to see how much it takes to raise that chicken or that pig. So I see still in the countryside, whatever culture, there's an awareness to our environment and food. The big city, we are a little bit more lax about throwing away and saving food.
Lydia, I have to say that you have the kind of voice that people used to say, oh, I could listen to you read a phone book if
people know what phone books are anymore these days, you know? And when you describe that, I think that people do listen just because they want to hear you speak. And I guess maybe part of that, it's funny because we see you now and, you know, you're at Eataly, which, the Grand Italian Food Hall in here in Chicago, which is such a, like, the epicenter of beautiful abundance. And then we hear about how you grew up in land that was, you know, eventually Yugoslavia. I mean, that informs what you speak of, and maybe that's why people do listen, not only how you say it, but why you say it too, which is amazing.
Well, because maybe I lived it, mm-hmm. you know, and the experience, and the opportunity now to share such a beautiful setting. You know, these are the times you can expect people now to be on the farm. You know, this is so the time of Eataly, of this availability has come. But even within that context, you know, we're very conscious that we recycle, that we use everything. It alla scuola, a lot of the classes is, you know, recycling. Papa al pomodoro, this great tomato soup with leftover bread. Panzanella, the same thing. These Italian renditions that are traditional recipes, but what they do exemplify is the recycling of bread in this case, recycling of food instead of throwing it out. Making it a frittata, even if you have some spaghetti left over from the night before, you warm it up, whip up a few eggs, throw a little vegetables in there, even them left over from last night, you got yourself a marvelous fresh frittata, another meal.
So what I also find fascinating, of course, is not only your expertise in Italian food, but your open-mindedness about it, because right before we started chatting earlier, you mentioned that you had jackfruit for breakfast this morning, and regular listeners of Chewing know that we had the founder of Upton's Naturals on as a guest previously. He's using jackfruit, which looks like a giant spiky watermelon, to make things like vegan barbecue and like vegan pulled pork, and you're making all sorts of flavors. So how and why did you have jackfruit this morning for breakfast, and what are you thinking about?
I'm testing it. That's, you know, because I was curious. You first of all, I didn't know it. I was just in India and I came back and there was abundant. It's I think one of the countries that has most jackfruit. In South Asia you can find it. And yet they don't use it. It's a crop that is not fully utilized. And I says, well, I got to get to the bottom of this. I got to see it. You know, what can I do? Can I put it in a tomato sauce? Can I make a pasta sauce out of it or something? You know, so I'm curious, even though it's going kind of out of my culture, but the world has become so small. We are so much connected to each other that if this is a source of protein, of minerals, of vitamins and all of that, why aren't we using it to feed the people that are hungry?
That is fascinating. And that you were just in India. Well, somebody, a fellow journalist here in Chicago, mentioned to me that I should really check out an Italian and Indian restaurant here in Chicago. And I said, I never thought. Okay, all right, that makes sense. Yes, of course, there's Italian-American, there's Italian-Indian. There's an Italian-Indian restaurant here in Chicago, which seems to be so surprising to me. But what kind of foods or influences did you see when you were in India that you might bring back with you to work with, in addition to the jackfruit flavors-wise?
Well, I think if there is a common denominator between Italian and Indian is their extensive use of vegetables. You know, an Indian, the Indian culture with the Hindu and all that, they're vegetarian. A lot of them respect life. And so, you know, I saw a lot of use of vegetables made into a full satisfying meal, just as if it had a piece of meat. And Italians, maybe not out of creed or religion, but out of, you know, necessity, there wasn't too much proteins, but vegetables, there was a lot, and beans and other forms of proteins. We use a lot of vegetables, and I love cooking with vegetables. So that is the kind of the common denominator. And I think health-wise, it becomes ever more evident that, you know, vegetables are at the basis, you know, the best thing for us to eat. So, you know, as the world gets smaller and smaller, cultures tie more and more together with common denominators in what they eat and why they eat it.
I love that so much. And So we've talked a lot about the body part of food and also the mind part. There is a project at Eataly here in Chicago that is going on. It is kind of mind-blowing, actually. It is this intellectual exploration of pizza, Quattro Mani, and I know I'm got the accent wrong on that, but what is this intellectual conversation about pizza that you're having? And it's a year-long project.
Well, Quattro Mani is four hands. That means that two people are working at it together, learning from each other, teaching, and whatever. Now, pizza, you know, as Italian as it sounds, every major culture has a flatbread in their repertoire of cuisine. So there's some dough that's been flattened out and somehow cooked, and something gets added on top of it. So, you know, ours is the pizza, if you will, Napoletana and all that. And we, in Italian, there's a word, approfondire, to go deep into the subject of pizza. So it's going to last the whole year. Every Tuesday, we have a different chef with our chefs. They testing. And so far, the focus is on doughs. We have the regular pizza dough. We have whole wheat pizza dough. We have a gluten-free pizza dough. You know, now these days everybody's conscious about gluten and so on. And we have a doppio zero. Doppio zero is the very, very fine, almost like cake flour pizza dough. So that's the basics of our doughs. As a matter of fact, today, before I had a meeting, I went to the pizza and I looked at all the doughs and I talked to the pizzaiolo and I said, well, you know, how do they all cook? I said, make me a whole wheat one. I want to test it. I want to see it. And he, in turn, talked to me. A whole wheat pizza, it's heavier because it has the bran or whatever. It doesn't rise as in the Neapolitan pizza. What's important is the cornicione, which is the frame that kind of puffs, makes this blistery kind of look. The whole wheat does not do that. So you have to kind of extend it a little thinner. Do not overload it. You know, very simple on top, because you have to give it a chance for it to rise and cook in the oven. The oven, a temperature a little lower than, you know, the 900 degrees that regular pizza in 90 seconds is done, a lower and longer cooking in the oven so that the heavier dough has an opportunity to rise. So there are a lot of nuances, you know, and as we are moving on into the nutritional aspect, the health aspects of everything, pizza has to go that way as well. But there are a lot of nuances that one could learn in going that way. And we are using our, you know, Neapolitan experts from Rosso Pomodoro with the local chefs and all the combining and sort of working on the future of pizza.
And what's fascinating is that we had, you had, I should say, at Eataly Chicago, it kicked off with a Macau-inspired chef who did flavors like Portuguese sausage and curry sauce and mozzarella on a pizza. And then at the same time, your pizza maker at Eataly was doing her version of a bacala pizza. And that's just mind-blowing. Again, it's fascinating. I'm so looking forward to seeing what's going to be happening with the future pizzas. So can you give us a tease of any... Are you going to be doing any pizzas in the series? What kind of pizza would you do in the series?
Well, you know, pizza is Neapolitan mostly and Roman. I am way up north. But if I were to do pizza, I guess I would do it like I do pasta. The ingredients would be seasonal. So certainly if we do it in October, I would have the truffle right on top. A nice whole egg on top of that pizza. Have that kind of cook nice and soft and then shave some truffles on top. Are you talking about now winter? Well, now winter is, you know, kind of that hardy vegetables. So I can see kale on it. I can see broccoli di rape on it. Sausages, yes, absolutely. And cheese. But I would say that I am a minimalist in a sense when it comes to food. Too much doesn't always mean better. So a well-balanced number of elements that kind of harmonize together on a nice crusty dough.
Okay, I don't know if you can hear my stomach growling from over here, but absolutely, that all sounds amazing. Lydia Bastianic, a woman of many talents. Thank you so much for joining us here on Chewing. And Monica, I don't know if you should let Monica run away with the conversation tonight. You might need to rein her in a little bit.
You think so?
No, it's okay.
No. We'll have fun. We'll let the audience guide us.
For sure. Thank you, Lydia.
Oi, Marie. Oi, Marie. Da che giorno che t'ho vista, ho perduto la mia testa, sai perché? Da che giorno più non dorme, penso a te.
What a fun interview. It sounds like she liked you almost as much as she liked me. And you know, something interesting I found out when I interviewed her at the Harold Washington Library is that she was a refugee. And so I had to say, I don't want to be political here, but hooray for refugees. And everybody clapped. Because you see what kind of stuff refugees can bring America? Let's support them.
Absolutely. And this is now the end of a whirlwind day because I started out early this morning in Chinatown. Again, an epicenter of immigrant and refugee culinary innovation here in Chicago. And I got together with our dear friend, Seth Zurer, who is not only the founder of Bacon Fest here in Chicago, but also Dumpling Fest. And I got a chance to go to the inaugural Dumpling Fest teaser last year. But you know, I am on a Xiaolongbao quest, the Shanghai-style soup dumpling. I had heard that there was a Xiaolongbao at this restaurant that we went to. It was not quite exactly what I expected, but I talked a little bit about not only dumplings, but bacon, as well as perspective and some of the social giving that happens at some of these amazing food fests that Seth puts on.
So it's not just a big gorgeo fest. There's some, you know, really socially responsible things behind them.
Yes. And fascinating, again, just the kind of culinary global explorations that can happen within the context of dumpling and bacon worlds.
Well, let's hear it.
So we are standing outside of Slurp Slurp Restaurant in Chinatown in Chicago on the south side, near south side. And I am here with dear old friend, and not old as an age, but like longtime friend, Seth Zurer, who is the co-founder of Dumpling Fest and Bacon Fest. For people who are not for some reason familiar with those concepts, what's a Dumpling Fest? What's a Bacon Fest?
So the festivals that we produce are these incredible indoor chef tasting festivals where we invite really incredible chefs from great Chicago restaurants to basically riff on a theme of an ingredient. So Bacon Fest is predictably, we give them 50 pounds of delicious Newski's bacon and we say, hey, what can you do with that? And the results are like wildly creative that span the entire culinary gamut from sweet desserts to kind of traditional breakfast to BLT sandwiches to sort of international takes on things you can do with bacon. And similarly with Dumpling Fest, we give chefs the idea, hey, bring me a dumpling that expresses your personality in some way. And we get things like a mix of a hot pot with wontons inside to nouveau molecular gastronomy dumplings made from compressed cotton candy and Concord grape gelée, all the way to like a traditional prune Polish pierogi. So these festivals end up being places where real foodies can connect with chefs who are just as passionate about ingredients and about creativity in the culinary world, and you kind of meet your tribe, fellow bacon lovers, fellow dumpling lovers, and the chefs who care for you.
So you joined me on my current Xiaolongbao quest, and Xiaolongbao being the Shanghai-style soup dumplings. Slurp Slurp was very good for noodles and dumplings, but did not have that specific style dumpling that I asked about. Can you tell me, why did you decide to focus on dumplings? Because, you know, bacon, everybody says, is kind of like the gateway meat. We all know bacon, you know, right now you've got to rush off to do a big bacon news story. But why dumplings? They're kind of like the, you know, sort of like dowdy little, I don't know, brother or sister of foods.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of why it's interesting to me, because to me, the idea of dumplings is all about hidden delights. It's about this unprepossessing exterior that contains an incredible depth of flavor and variety. And if you think about dumplings, it's easy to get sidetracked on, oh, well, I'm going to get pan-fried dumplings like one pot stickers like at a Chinese restaurant. But in fact, the dumpling is a global art form, and everything from a matzo ball to a pierogi to a calzone or an empanada to, you know, every country in the world has a dumpling that is close to its heart. And so that was what interests me about Dumpling Fest. And I think in that regard, it's the same as Bacon Fest, in that the dumpling idea is an idea that you can construct these miraculous edifices of culinary genius on top of. So you take it as a humble starting point, but you then do these flights of fancy and use it as a launching pad for creativity.
So as someone who did have a chance to cover the inaugural Dumpling Fest tease for the Chicago Tribune, I'll post a link to the story on our Tumblr page. It was kind of funny because the two winners, there was a judge's choice and a people's choice. I remember one, we were talking about over lunch being a fairly traditional dumpling, and I don't remember exactly what the details were with the other one. I remember who won it, but I remember it was pretty creative. Do you remember who, which won which dumplings?
Yeah.
Prizes? Awards?
Yeah, so I think Lost Lake won the People's Choice,
right,
which is, you know, Paul McGee's Tiki Bar, which used to have an attached takeout Chinese restaurant, but they've been working on sort of resurrecting it. But they made a hot pot with dumplings inside. I can't remember. There was like an incredibly well-crafted dumpling with a beautiful deep broth, and then they had a paired tiki cocktail with it, too. So it was like it hit sort of what they're good at and then mixed their own sort of preoccupation with dumplings. And then, like you said, the one that won the judge's choice was Shanghai Terrace's Shumai, which was like just a beautiful traditional Chinese dumpling. You know, Shumai's got the open top, so you can see the filling inside steamed, and then topped with a very judiciously applied sprinkling of caviar of Tobiko and like some minced up truffle pate. And it was incredible. It was an incredible sort of subtle but also full of like flavor, and I think it reflected, even just in those two, the sort of breadth of people that are doing traditional stuff with a riff and people that are starting from like, how can we deconstruct and reconstruct a dumpling and mix it up with something you wouldn't expect.
That's what I love about all American dumplings, especially, like I said, not only did they look really traditional, but have a few luxurious touches that one might not find at your traditional dim sum dumpling. And now, we were talking about, that was kind of like the inaugural tease for Dumpling Fest. I'm kind of on a dumpling diet right now, but might be ready for more dumplings eventually. So what's the future of Dumpling Fest look like?
So part of the vision for Dumpling Fest, which I should call by its full name.
Oh, right.
The Festival of International Dumplings and Old School Hip Hop, also known as Rapper's Delight with a W. So I think we started small. We had 15 chefs. We had a few hundred people. We had a DJ. But I think the real vision for Dumpling Fest is that it becomes a combination rap concert and chef festival. And in my fantasy, in my dream, David Chang from the Momofuku Empire and Questlove are having a rap battle on stage followed by like a dumpling eating competition. So until I reach that, I feel that I will not have realized my dreams about Dumpling Fest. So you can expect more music and more awesome stuff at Dumpling Fest to come.
I want whatever's in your dumplings, because that sounds like pretty mind-expanding dreams there. And then also Bacon Fest. So I have also had a chance to not only attend, but judge Bacon Fest in previous years, which I'm not allowed to do being part of the Tribune journalism team. But in any case, I'd like to say that it is one of the most joyous expressions of food that I've been to in any kind of food festival. So what's the future of Bacon Fest in Chicago look like this year?
So Bacon Fest is coming up in just 2 months. It's March 31st and April 1st. We're back at the UIC Forum, which is down at Roosevelt Hall. So the tickets are actually on sale right now. We just released our chef roster. So we're at about 150 restaurants now for the event, which happens over three sessions. And this year, you know, we kind of have some stuff that works really well with Bacon Fest, which we try to repeat every year, which is that we have this incredible partner, Newskies, that provides bacon for the chefs to use if they want it. And then we have a crew of sort of the core veterans that come back every year with new and exciting ideas and new ambitious goals. And then this year we have a pretty large contingency of new restaurants. There's 48 new restaurants. And those are folks that have never been to Bacon Fest before as a restaurant, which means that you're going to get new blood and new creativity and new dishes and brand new ways to enjoy bacon. So that's what we're excited about. And it's our ninth year doing Bacon Fest. It seems amazing, but you know, we started in 2009, in the dining room of the Publican with 75 guests and 10 chefs, and it's really grown astronomically since then, and we're excited to see where we can go. Year 10 next year, we're looking forward to it being a really big year and kind of mixing up the format a little bit and growing it in a way that we haven't done in the last couple of years. So the future of bacon is bright. Don't believe the haters that say there's a bacon shortage. We got plenty of bacon at Bacon Fest.
Not the least of which, not only are these huge gastronomic, basically really super fun food festivals, you've got a really important social element that you've built into both.
Yeah, that's right. So from the very beginning, we've been interested in how we can kind of translate gluttony and greed into social benefit. And the way that we've done it the most is by partnering with the Greater Chicago Food Depository. So every year we give a big chunk of the proceeds from Bacon Fest and from Dumpling Fest to the food bank. And so over the years, since we started supporting the food bank, we've given more than $360,000 in cash. We've had a food drive at the event that's had presented like 13,000 pounds of food. We've had different arrangements with sponsors over the year to do matches. They sell raffle tickets at the event. So it's important to us because we feel like this is America, you know, this is the richest country in the world, and this is one of the wealthiest cities in the world. It's a scandal that people are hungry on the street, that there's millions of people that don't know where the next meal is coming from. And so we want to make sure that we're doing our part to help sort of at least put a Band-Aid on that problem. You know, the food bank's goal is to end hunger, and we're for that, whether it means coming to Bacon Fest and not being hungry or being able to know where your next meal is coming from.
And, I mean, not that, like, just a celebration of food and its global forms isn't enough in and of itself. I mean, really. But you actually, like, get in there and you go and, like, pack foods and packing days.
Yeah, that's right. So the last couple of years we've done these repack sessions where, you know, the food bank is a huge distribution center. So they, on one side, they get the trailers full of either donated food or food that they buy. And then the other side, they have their delivery trucks, which they fill with individual boxes of food for families that need it or food that's broken down in a way that food pantries can use. And so somebody has to get that food from the trailers into the individual packaging or however it's going to be distributed. And that's one thing which, if you want to volunteer and you want to give your time to the food bank and help fight hunger, it's a great way to spend a Saturday afternoon. About 3 hours, you basically, last time I went, we were breaking down pallets of onions, 50-pound bags of onions, and like sorting out ones that were, you know, a little bit past their prime and then repacking them for distribution to food pantries. So it's a really great organization and we're really proud to support them.
On all spectrums of the food rainbow, our dear friend, Seth Zierer. I know Monica's sadly not able to join us here today, but you're going to be crossing paths kind of in Paris because you're going to be going soon in May. She's going in April. We actually got together sensibly to talk about that, but we'll figure out to see what has happened, maybe if that affects the future of Dumpling or Bacon Fest. Seth, thank you so much for joining us on Chewing and on the middle of the street in Chinatown, which is, yeah, in case you hear, like, car starting and all that. Thanks so much, and happy baconing and dumplinging.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Monica, you recently had a chance to try what may be a hidden in plain sight Taiwanese specialty here in Chicago.
Yeah, you know, I've been pretty excited about this for a while. Someone told us that there are Taiwanese owners of the historic Whitehall Hotel in downtown Chicago.
Yeah, that was me who told you because I heard about it.
I remember some freaky person told me. I wasn't sure. So I looked at the menu and it looked really impressive. It's called May's Corner and they say they use only Berkshire pork for their dumplings. And Berkshire pork is a heritage breed that's got lots of fat and it's almost always raised outdoors. So I was like, wow, sustainable pork and Chinese stuff. And one of the things I love most in this world is Taiwanese noodle soup called niu ru mian, which is often this wonderful, rich, beefy broth, and then these thick noodles, and then tender pieces of braised, sometimes brisket, sometimes oxtail. And so I went with my friend and colleague from WBEZ, who does a lot of our data analytics. Her name is Hui Huang. And I met her on New Year's Eve, Chinese New Year's Eve, and I thought this is an auspicious time to try this delicious stuff, and here's what happened. Hi, Hui,
恭喜发财，新年快乐。
So good to see you on this New Year's Eve day.
Yes, great seeing you too. I'm in the Chinese restaurant.
So here we are at May's Corner in the Whitehall Hotel. And what looks good to you?
I think this Sichuan short ribs looks great. I believe it is what we call the niu rou mian, right? The beef noodle soup. Yeah. I heard a great thing about it.
Okay, I want to try that and maybe probably some dumplings today.
Yeah, definitely let's do dumplings. I think it is one of the traditional dishes we will eat in the Chinese New Year, right?
And I'm so impressed that here they use only Berkshire pork in their dumplings.
Oh,
that's interesting to me.
Interesting.
And those are usually really well-bred pigs who are usually not factory farmed, and they've got a lot of fat, a lot of delicious fat.
Really?
They usually live outside, so...
Okay.
I am impressed. Okay, so in the Sichuan dumplings or in the Hong Kong wontons, which one? I wish they had this. It's weird there's no Chinese writing.
Do you like spicy food?
I love
Sichuan
spicy.
Sichuan will be the one that
Do you like spicy?
I love spicy.
Okay,
so let's do the spicy. Yeah.
So the noodle soup,
okay.
The duck wrap,
okay.
And Sichuan wontons?
Sichuan wontons, no problem.
Yeah.
So how would you like it first? Like, does it matter?
They can come
whatever.
Yeah. Okay, no problem.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll do Chinese style that everything come at the same time.
Okay. Thank you.
What do you think that nothing is in Chinese?
That's... pretty well, I guess that's typical in this area, I guess, then, right? So
in the Gold Coast, but you think like if they're expecting to have Chinese customers, they'd have something in Chinese.
That's usually what I expect, you know, even like a restaurant in Argyle, like outside of Chinatown. Well, the authentic one, which I'm going to go tonight, will be have the Chinese menu, you know, like the descriptions there.
Where are you going?
I honestly don't know. Is it English name, but because we all call it Meer Xiang,
On Broadway.
On Broadway, Gross Argyle.
Are you meeting a bunch of Taiwanese?
Yes, we are. And we're going to have some, you know, the traditional Taiwanese food, like the rice noodles, and I think they have some kind of a noodle soup, duck noodle soup, which is also very typical Taiwanese street food.
Yeah.
So, very excited.
It's a pretty room, if nothing else.
It is.
So my friend Wen told me today that because it's the year of the rooster, you have to say Happy New Year before midnight tonight. If you show up tomorrow and say Happy New Year, you're a weasel. Because the weasel traditionally went to the rooster on New Year's morning and said all sorts of nice things to the rooster.
Oh.
To try to get him to let his guard down so he could get him and get the chickens. And so always say it before on the Year of the Rooster.
That's interesting. Honestly, that's the first I heard about that.
And I'm going to go out and buy some red underwear tonight because I'm a rooster.
Oh, yes. So this will be the year that if you're the Year of Rooster, you're supposed to go to the temple, like ask the god to shade you from all the bad luck. Those type of things, and wearing red underwear definitely helps.
And just be careful in general.
Yes, exactly, for the people who born in the Year of Roosters.
So, while we're waiting here, we're mentioning some of the things we see on the menu, and we're a little surprised at the pork chop suey. And there's something else that caught your eye. What was it?
I'd have to say, every time I went to a restaurant with egg foo young, I'm always skeptical. Because seriously, it just for me, just so American. Like, I never ever see that in the menu when I live in Taiwan. So, on the menu in Taiwan. So, it was just like, I don't know.
And you tried it for the first time recently.
Yeah, I had it like probably 2 years ago. It's definitely something interesting.
What do you think? Delicious? Weird? What?
Well, it's not too bad, right? Gravy, eggs, and a bunch of things. I cannot really tell what they are. So it's not bad, especially I was pretty hungry that day. Yeah. So, but if you ask me if I ever want to try it again, the answer is probably not.
Okay. Wow. So Hui, it just arrived. What does this noodle soup look like to you?
It looks great. I mean, the presentation is awesome. They have the vegetable on the side and then on the beef looks very good. It doesn't look too fatty for us. It
looks like a pound of short rib meat kind of fanned out and then these zhao bite side, these small bok choys. So thin noodles in sort of a reddish broth and preserved vegetable, hot chili oil, and scallions.
Yeah, preserved vegetable, that is awesome because that is what I usually add when I have a beef noodle soup. But here, you don't always got those kind of preserved vegetables. So I'm very happy to see that one.
Okay, well, let's start serving it up and digging in.
First bite. It's good, not as spicy as I thought. The textures of the noodle is very good. It's very cooked well. Now I'm going to try the beef. Well, it's definitely a good quality of the beef. Now time for soup. I have to say it's a little bit disappointed. It's not as flavorful as I thought it would be. I don't know if they cook the soup with the beef because you just don't get the flavor. And it's also not as spicy as I expected. Maybe that's why they put the spicy sauce on the side. But I think, the broth is the area they can probably improve on. Now your turn, try.
Yeah, noodles are good. Mm-hmm. Beef. I guess I'd hope there'd be a little five-spice flavor, but... Mm-hmm. Okay. Broth time... Yeah, not a super impressive broth. Right.
And I think, honestly, I think temperature-wise, it's not hot enough. Mm-hmm. I think they might tailor to Western customers who don't like too hot their broth. Yeah. But if I'm in other places, I might just send it back to say, heat up my soup.
Exactly. Well, since it's not super hot, let's eat it now.
Yep.
Okay, Hui, now let's move on to the Sichuan dumplings. Again, I'm impressed that they have Berkshire pork inside them, and they're in a nice little red sauce with, again, the small vegetables next to them. They're pretty. We're going to post a picture.
All right.
Dig in.
All right. Well, I like the skin. Looks pretty thin, so which is a good sign.
Yeah.
The filling is very fresh. I think they have a shrimp and a pork. Good job there, and I can hardly feel the skin, so meaning that is a thing enough. Yeah. So I like it.
Nice light skin.
Yes.
With these Sichuan dumplings, I usually like love the sauce on the bottom, like the spicy and the vinegary. So let's see, tasty. I could go with a little more vinegar, maybe soy sauce in the broth.
I mean, sauce wise, they can probably add a little bit more
spice it up. Okay.
Yep.
And what about the duck rolls?
All right.
Like a mushroom rabbit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, similar to the one they use for bacon duck. Okay. And they have the sauce, which also like a bacon duck sauce.
Mm-hmm.
I like the sauce.
Yeah.
What do you think?
That's pretty good duck meat.
Mm-hmm. It seems a little bit plum flavor or something in the sauce, right? It's a little bit different.
I think it's a plum sauce, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad. Okay, so for those who really like tons of flavor, like Sichuan meals, maybe this may not be the place to go. But the food's pretty good and nice atmosphere, a lot of jazz.
Yeah, great atmosphere. I like the lamp. Could be romantic.
Yeah,
I think a good date spot.
Too bad we're two old married ladies.
Oh wow, we can still enjoy each other's company.
Right. Well, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too. 恭喜发财.
忘不了你。
So, Louisa, as you heard, kind of disappointing and really expensive.
Oh, boy. Well, at least you had long noodles, and that's good luck for Chinese New Year's Eve especially.
That's true, and they had your favorite, Egg Foo Young, and you heard Hui talk about what she thinks when she sees Egg Foo Young on Chinese menus. But, you know, you got to try stuff in order to find out. I talked to her later. She said, not a place I'd return to, but she did go to what I call Mei Sheng on Broadway, which is a Taiwanese restaurant. And she met up with friends that night, and she had a great meal. So that may be a better option. And then there's a new place in Chicago called Taipei Cafe. Have you tried it yet?
Not yet. I passed by during my Xiaolongbao quest. But this was kind of a nice little mashup. Not only did you get to do the segment that you like to call what Chinese people eat when Chinese people go to Chinese restaurants, but it was also a will she eat it? And so, you know, it was kind of a nice convergence. I mean, trying to look on the bright side for Chinese New Year since we're still in that kind of like whole festival period.
Yeah, I wish I didn't regret eating the food, but you know, you gotta try it.
Chewing is an independent production of us, Louisa Chu and Monica Eng.
Our noodly producer is Iris Lin.
Listen to all our episodes at chewing.xyz and chicagotribune.com/chewingpodcast.
And please subscribe to our podcast. It's free on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And rate and review us while you're there. It super helps.
Plus, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/chewingpodcast.
And follow us on Twitter. I'm at Monica Eng. Louisa's at Louisa Chu. Or check out at Chewing Podcast.
Thank you for listening to Chewing. I am Louisa Chu.
And I'm Monica Eng. And until our next episode, next season, keep it dumplingy.
Noodly, dumplingy.
Bacony.
Come on.